Well, one of my favorite things to do in life is to hear people's stories. As far back as I can remember, I've been fascinated to hear somebody tell about how they grew up or their experiences growing up, good or bad, if they're in a relationship. I'm kind of a big romantic. I love to hear how people met, who made the first move, you know, when they knew the other person was the one, all of that. I also love to hear people's stories, the journey of faith. Stories, because knowing someone's story, it really helps you. I love to hear it. Many stories aren't flashy or filled with, you know, car theft and producing meth, but they're significant. They're all, and you know, some are awe-inspiring, and some of them, far too many of them, are heartbreaking. But beyond just knowing the value, just having the value for other people's stories, I love to hear other people's stories because knowing someone's story helps you and helps me better understand them. It helps us better love them. It is far more difficult to judge or misjudge people if you know their stories. In fact, one of the quickest ways to overcome judgment or misjudgment in your life when it comes to people is to actually spend time with people that you tend to judge, to get their stories. Because somehow knowing the whole person, knowing their story, it helps put in context everything that they say and everything they do. And you get a chance to better empathize and interact with them with understanding. And the other cool thing that I love about hearing people's stories is the way that it impacts me. Almost every time I hear somebody's personal story, their journey, it impacts me in some way. Especially when we talk about struggles, past or present. Because while we can admire people because of their strengths, we most connect with people in their weaknesses, right? I mean, have you ever noticed that? I mean, think about the people that you most feel most connected to or the most comfortable around. It's part of it is because you feel a shared imperfection. It's like the playing field is level. I don't have to pretend. I don't have to fake it. That we can know and understand one another. And so knowing someone's story can help you better interpret what they say and what they do. And some of you, you've known me for several years, but most of you, you've only known me for a short time, or you've known me from a distance. Some of you don't know me at all. This is only your first, second, or third time, and you don't have a clue who I am. And as I said, not really knowing someone makes it easy to maybe misunderstand or misjudge what motivates them, why they do what they do, why they say what they say. And so if you're considering being engaged in this community, I mean, some of you already are, and you don't even really know me that well, but if you're going to be engaged or you're considering being engaged in this community, I feel it's important for you to better know and understand. To know and understand the one who 2.5 years ago sat with a group of young adults in the evening on a back deck of my home, along with my wife, and we dreamed. And we dreamed of something. We dreamed of a different kind of a Jesus community in Wichita, a dream that was both exciting and terrifying all in one, especially for my wife. It's a community designed with the nun, the non, the post-Christian, the outsider in mind, one that wasn't about just gathering like-minded people into a safe bubble and a holy huddle and keep out of the world, but instead that we would become a movement, that helps people find and follow Jesus, and then catalyzes individuals to be change makers into the city. As my friend Jerry likes to say, that we gather and then we scatter to impact the lives of the people with radical love and the good news of Jesus. And my hope is that when you leave here today, that you'll have a better understanding of who I am and why I do what I do, what motivates me, what my end game is, that you would be given a set of lenses to be able to more accurately interpret the things that I say or what we do as a community, why we do it, and that you'll discover a connection between what you hear today and your own personal next step and your own personal pursuit of Jesus, your own personal faith journey. So the short version of my story is this, and some of you have heard it, but many of you have not. I was born in southeast Kansas in Parsons, which is exactly in the middle of nowhere. My parents were in college, and then after they graduated, my dad, my folks and I was a baby, we moved to Wisconsin, to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, where my dad was a school teacher, my mother became a hairdresser, and it was a complex situation. I'll just say it like that. There was some complexity to the relationship and what and the dynamics that I grew up in. And when I was 8, my parents divorced. It was interesting because we went to church, but then experienced a lot of dynamics in what was going on in the home. And there just was some things that didn't line up. And so my dad and I moved from Wisconsin to Wichita. And part of that, we had some extended family in the area. My grandparents lived not far away. And so we moved here to start over. And my dad went from being a school teacher to a guy gave him a chance to work at Hawker at Beechcraft at the time, gave him a foot in the door. My dad did, he plugged in and did really well. I was 8 years old, middle of fourth grade, and we started attending a church here in Wichita. And after going for a little while, my dad is not one to sit on the sidelines, so approached some of the leadership and said, "Hey, I'd really like to serve. I've trained in music, and I love kids and would love to serve." And at first, they were really excited and said, "Well, tell us more." And they were kind of getting the story, and I was with them. And especially at that point of in history, and especially in the state of Kansas, single dads were kind of unheard of. And so the leaders asked, "Well, Mr. Pickering, well, we hate to ask, but how did your wife die?" And it's like, "Well, my wife didn't die. I'm divorced." And at that point, they didn't care about any details or any reasons or what was going on. "Oh, well, Mr. Pickering, then, you know, you can attend, but that's going to be about it." And my dad was at such a vulnerable point, and granted, was an overreaction, it was, but literally he said, "Screw the church." And for the next 25 years, other than a wedding or a funeral, wouldn't step foot in one. There have been some other things along the way. And so, essentially, the home that I grew up in was a little bit hostile towards the church. And I struggled with had a lot of issues at that point. I was ADHD and still am. Just spend a little time with me. You'll figure it out. And so that made me really interesting to both raise and try to educate for my teachers and all that. So I got in trouble quite a lot. I spent more time in the principal's office than the classroom. And I also struggled with a moral compass because I wasn't involved in a community. And I was growing up in a home that was a little bit hostile. And so the other things that tied into it was about 8 years old was my first exposure to hardcore pornography. And then so I'm going through school and I'm struggling. I've got this added thing. And then when I was 14, I lost my virginity. When I was 15, I started smoking pot. When I was 16, I started drinking. And I kept trying to add these things because I had the struggle because I actually believed in God. I actually believed in Jesus. In fact, in high school, I actually had a Bible my parents gave me when I was 14. If you knew me at 14, you'd know why they gave me a Bible. And I actually would take it to school, and I would read it and mark it. I still have it to this day. It's like falling apart. But I was really struggling because I believed in certain things, but at the same time, I constantly live with but I can't be saved. Like, I believe in this, but, there's some things in my life I've got to get in order. And so I was kind of living this pattern of life. Now, along this, I had grandparents, both my mother's parents and my dad's parents, that they were phenomenal influences in my life. Anytime I was with them in Oklahoma or Southeast Kansas, you better believe they had me going to church with them because, like, they had me, so you're coming to church. And, man, they just were great people. They were so gracious and generous and hospitable and loved their neighbors and always had a pot of coffee ready. And if anybody showed up, like, nobody was leaving grandma's house hungry, which is part of the reason one set where, like, they couldn't get their arms around each other because they had a lot of company. And but they loved each other, and they were filled with love and their churches. And so I grew up with, like, kind of this whole kind of mixed up, you know, scenario and picture of what is, you know, church and God and to be a Christian and all that. And then you fast forward, I went into the military. I quit the pot because you can't do that in military. It doesn't matter if it's legal in some states now. But so then now I'm in the military. I'm traveling overseas into different countries, and I was just kind of your typical Navy airman. You pull into a port, and you're making new friends with girls, and that was my life. And then finally for me, it was March 20th, 1988 at 2 a.m. I had just gotten back. I had gone down to Tijuana because all the clubs down there, like, it was like 50 cents margaritas and tequila shots, so that would fit my budget. And there was always college kids down there because the drinking age was 18. And met some girl down there from UCLA, went up for the weekend. And then I got back about 2 a.m. on a Sunday. I'm stationed on an aircraft carrier. I'm getting ready for bed. And the only way I can describe it is it suddenly hit me. Like, I kind of had this vision. I saw my life for what it was. I saw this running from God and this just pushing him arm's length and this delaying that, you know, I'll get my life cleaned up and together and then, you know, then I can be a Christian. Then I can be like my grandparents or a lot of people they go to church with. Then I'll be good enough. Then I can belong to whatever that is. But what happened in that moment is I just knew I was just making things worse. I was just making them more complicated, not less complicated. And so I prayed with tears. God, if you're there and it's not too late, change my life. And the other thing that I prayed is that he would help me meet a Christian woman. Like in my mind, that was the other key thing. Like I got to have somebody help me with this. And so I did it for about an hour, just wept and prayed and surrendered. God, I give up. And went to the church, this great church, the next morning just outside of San Diego. It was a church about 5,000. My theory was, well, if all those people go there, maybe they're doing something right. I've learned that's not always the best judge of a church. However, in this case, it was. It was an amazing experience from the moment I walked into the door. I met my wife, my future wife, that morning. So the good day. I always say I met Jesus and my wife same day. But for me, that was a defining moment. And then what happened after that was, it just was incredible. My whole life changed. Around that time, I stumbled upon what became one of my favorite texts in the Old Testament. It was written by a godfather named Isaiah. And Isaiah was a prophet. And a prophet was just simply somebody who was given the ability by God to be able to play the tape forward and see the directions that things were going, where things were headed. And some theologians refer to Isaiah as the fifth gospel, because there are so many parts in Isaiah where it's just looking forward to the one that would come, the grace bringer, the healer. It vividly describes the person, the life, and the point of Jesus about 700 years before he even arrives on the scene. And early in the book of Isaiah, in Isaiah chapter 6, we don't know if it was a dream. We don't know if Isaiah was sleeping, he has this dream, or if God was somehow just showing him something in his mind. Isaiah describes it as a vision. But somehow God drew him into an experience that felt absolutely real in the moment. And he describes this moment in this dream, this vision, where suddenly he's somehow in the presence of where God dwells. And as you would expect for Isaiah, this is dramatic, it is extraordinary, and it's terrifying. And in his terror, in this moment, he realizes, I am standing before God. And he exclaims, woe to me, for I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live with a people, among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty. In other words, Isaiah interprets the fact that he's in God's presence as that the same way we would. He thinks this is it. Like, I don't know what happened, but the only plausible reason that I am now in God's presence is somehow my chances are over. Like all my chances to do good or be good are done. And now I'm about to be weighed and measured. This is my judgment day. And he fears exactly what we would fear. Somehow in these proceedings, they're going to print off my entire browsing and text message history that I tried to delete off my phone and laptop. It was apparently saved in the cloud. Yeah, I thought that was funny. They're going to pull up my entire Netflix history, pull up the video on the Jumbotron of everything that I've said or done, or oh my gosh, every secret thought. Every secret judgment, every secret fantasy. Some of you are flashing back to your old Baptist days. Every word, you know, mumbled under my breath. You know, every time I knew the good that I should do and chose not to do, or I chose to do the opposite of the good that I should do, or the times that I used others for my benefit. And Isaiah's mind goes immediately to all the things that our minds would go to. If suddenly we were standing before God to be judged, seeing him as he truly is. All of his fullness, nothing hidden from the being that transcends space and time, who created the universe, who created us, a God for whom there are no secrets. And for all of us have an area or areas of our life where we have a chronic sense of falling short in our own eyes, let alone God's, right? So it makes perfect sense that Isaiah immediately passes judgment on himself. He says, I'm a man of unclean lips. Living among a people of unclean lips. I'm a mess. I'm broken. I live among a people that are broken. And he assumes that what happens next is based on his merit, his worthiness, his behavior. He knows, woe to me. I'm ruined. And then in Isaiah's moment of total loss and despair, something unexpected and huge happens. And it's a little hard to understand because of all of the symbolism, but here's what Isaiah recounts. "Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, 'See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away. Your sin is atoned for.'" And again, this text is so rich with symbolism that I just don't have the time to go into this morning. But essentially what Isaiah experiences here is a glimpse of the good news to come. 700 years in advance, a foreshadowing, a glimpse of the grace that would be and is ultimately offered to us through the person of Jesus Christ. The person, the life, and the sacrifice of Jesus. And in that moment, instead of getting deserved judgment, Elijah is freely given. He's freely given undeservable, unearnable grace, love, and declared not guilty, even though he is. It's not hard to imagine the impact that this had on Isaiah. Some of you have had a moment where you almost died and you were aware of it. I'm sure there's some that were not. I've had more than a few in my life, which should not be surprising. One was just a few years ago. I was about to enter an intersection on a green light, and I hit the brakes with about a half second to spare before a fully loaded semi blasted through the red light and almost T-boned me on my driver's side. And back then, and some of you know who Dave Ramsey was, I was driving my little Dave Ramsey car at the point. I would have been nothing but a puff of smoke. And if you've ever had a moment where you just thought, I was just about killed, you suddenly feel alive. Like, you're alive. I'm like calling Sean, I was just about killed. It was awesome. And, you know, you're like celebrating. And it's just like, I am alive. And there's elation. And Isaiah, with a half second to spare, went from thinking he was totally done for to being spared and saved from judgment and death and given new life. Be a great name for a church. Isaiah, he's caught up in this moment of indescribable joy and gratitude. And the way the text reads, it's almost as if Isaiah overhears God, because in the text, God isn't speaking directly to Isaiah, but Isaiah tells us, "Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send? Who will go for us?'" Apparently God has an assignment. He has a task. He needs a volunteer. And who do you think raises their hand the fastest? Elijah doesn't even ask what the assignment is. He's just so filled with gratitude to God that whatever the assignment is, of course the answer is yes. Are you kidding me? I was ruined. I was done for. And you declared me not guilty, even though I was. And instead of judgment, you've given me new life. So of course, whatever it is, here am I. Send me. And God takes him up on it. He gives Isaiah his assignment, and it is a tough one. He says, "You're to be my messenger to God's people." I can tell you, that's a tough assignment. "And you're to point people to me. And you are to make them aware of what I have planned for the future." And the message is that ultimately difficult, unimaginably difficult times lay ahead for him, for the nation. But in the midst where God seems absent or far away, he is at work. And in the very next chapter, Isaiah again predicts that the grace bringer and the helper will come, offering the redemption that Isaiah had experienced in his vision for all of mankind. It's a prediction that's often referenced this time of year as we near Christmas. "The Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son and will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. And you fast forward about 700 years, and everything Isaiah predicts comes true. The grace bringer comes, he teaches, he heals, he performs miracles. But as Isaiah predicts, those who should have recognized him don't. And as Isaiah predicts, they cut him down, and he's buried. And when all hope is lost, Jesus does exactly what he and what Isaiah predicted, and he rises from the dead. He proves he is the grace and the life bringer. He proves that he is the one, that if we will trust in him, it's like the coal from the altar in Isaiah's vision. He takes away our sin. He takes away our guilt. So that when the day comes that we all stand before a holy God in all of his fullness, All the ways that we've fallen short won't disqualify us, that we will have been atoned for. We are justified not by what we did, but by what God did through Jesus. Now, about 4 weeks after the resurrection, after running all around Jerusalem, showing himself to hundreds that he was, in fact, alive, Jesus calls his closest friends and followers to a hillside. And what happens on that hillside harkens back to Isaiah's experience 700 years before. Jesus says, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. This moment has happened. Therefore, go. I have a mission. Who will go for us? Who shall I send? Go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you." And you know what they did? They did exactly what we would have done if we had seen what they had seen and heard what they heard. Because when it really hits you, "I deserved judgment and was without hope, but instead, through the death and the resurrection of Jesus, I've been given undeservable, unearnable grace. I've been spared. I've been given new, never-ending life." When the magnitude of what God has done personally for you and for me and for the world, what it cost him, what it cost Jesus, then of course, whatever the assignment is, here I am, send me. March 20th, 1988, 2 a.m. That was my moment. That was my moment where, like never before, my utter brokenness and my sin and my unworthiness collided with God's love, his mercy, and the peace that I had struggled to get. And that was grace. That you don't get yourself all in order and clean yourself up and come to God. You can't. You just come. That's his job. That having peace with God could never be achieved based on what I did, but only what he did for me. And in the hours that followed, after experiencing this thrill of new life, the question at the core of my being was felt: who will go? Who shall I send? Because for me, there was just one choice: send me. And here's how I would have said it at 19, and here's how I would say it 30 years later. I'm going to spend the rest of my life helping as many people as possible find God and experience new life in Jesus. And more than just heaven when we die, to help myself and help everyone I can to daily learn and apply the commands and the teachings of Jesus to day-to-day life, because Jesus' great commission wasn't just help people believe about me. It was help people know me, believe in, trust in me, and each day obey me. Obey me. And here's why: because I love you, because my words are true, my words are trustworthy, my words are life, they're life-giving. That true life and transformation and hope and healing and direction is found in following and obeying me. And that's why I do what I do, what motivates me. It's deeply personal because I'm so grateful for what God has done and is doing in my life. Because I know what it's like and the consequences of turning my back on God in little and big ways. And also, I know what it feels like to be an outsider. So I wake up every morning, every day, intent on doing whatever I can to help everyone that I can connect more deeply with Jesus and connect more deeply with this community, to connect the dots between the teachings of Jesus and the New Testament to our day-to-day lives, to your relationships, to your singleness, to your morality, to your sexuality, to your dating, to your marriages, but not just you. Again, the vision of this community from the time it was only a dream was to connect with the 49% of this community that identify as none. No religious affiliation, as well as those from different faith backgrounds that are beginning to explore and turn towards and look at Jesus. And because I've personally experienced what it is to be made to feel like an outsider, I'm absolutely passionate about and committed to not just creating another church for church people. There's enough of those out there. But creating a church that the unchurched love to attend and engage. One of the important reasons we launched New Life was to connect to authentic community, those that were church orphans, those that walked away from church or faith or have kept it at an arm's distance, God to engage and re-engage Jesus and Jesus community. And for those of you that are here, you're listening, you've not yet crossed that line, you need to know we started this with you in mind. Create a place and a community where you are loved and you are valued no matter what point you are in the faith journey with God. For some of you, here's the application part. For some of you, you are kind of like me. You're kind of dating Jesus. You got one foot in and one foot out. I just want to invite for those of you that have only been dating Jesus like when I was 19, that though you may have unanswered questions still, and you know, the truth is you have enough information. You know in your gut, in your heart of hearts, there's a distance between you and God. And you've resisted because maybe you're afraid of what it might cost you in your relationships or your family or your career or your finances or your options on a Friday or Saturday night. Do I have to go stop going to the pump house? But as we said in the past few weeks, God doesn't want something from you. He wants something for you. Yes, it's true that following Jesus will eventually cost you something, but what it costs you is nothing compared to what you gain. For the rest of you, you're just so grateful for what God has done for you. You're seeking to follow. Maybe you're brand new at this, or you've been doing it for a few years, you're long into it, but you're following to the best of your ability. Some of you, you're just so grateful. Here am I, send me. I want to help each of you see what your next step is as it relates to this community, because we're less than 2 years in, which makes this a really exciting time to be a part of this community, because we're really just getting started. And because of what God has done for us and the opportunity he's presented for us to do something special in this city, my goal is to lead every one of you, everyone that I can, into full engagement in your life and in this community. To become fully engaged, this has four elements. And I want this for you because I want you to thrive in your life knowing you're part of something bigger than yourself, making a difference not just in your own life but the lives of others. And the great news is most of you are already doing this. One or more of these four already, you're already on your way. The first element of engagement is this. I want to ask you that you would regularly and consistently invest and invite. You'd say, Chad, that's two things. I know that, but they're connected. See, every day God has and is positioning you in the lives of someone, in specific lives to be investing in. People who maybe don't know the real Jesus, maybe because they were raised in another religion or another faith system or no faith system, or because they were raised in a caricature of what Jesus had in mind as he described and envisioned his movement, his ecclesia, or maybe they were deeply hurt by the church or a version of Christianity and at some point they lost faith in or they walked away from the church. They're post-Christian. They would identify as none, no religious affiliation. And God has positioned you to be the one to show them his extraordinary love by how you show them love, how you serve them, invest in their lives, and when the moment's right, invite them into authentic community. It's why I regularly encourage you, and again, we'll do it today. That's why we give you the cards that we do. It's to somehow help partner with you in the invitation process. You know, these are for our upcoming Christmas series that we're starting next week, and this is a tool to help you in that process, that you would be investing, inviting, whether it's a few people or many people. The second element is serving. Somewhere within New Life, Jesus seekers and Jesus followers serve. In fact, I'm going to do something right now. If you serve in any ministry role connected to Sunday mornings, whether it's kids' life or host team or tech or set up in any format for the weekend service, would you please stand up? Oh, a stand-up. Don't make me pick you up. So, okay, stay standing. Guys, you're so awesome. Some of you, you don't necessarily serve on the weekend experience, but you serve with our Project Laundry during the week, or maybe you help host or lead a small group. You serve somewhere else during the week, if you would also stand up. Yes, you have to stand up. I see some. Okay, look around. Okay, you guys can sit down. That just is so awesome. And for those of you that were still sitting, I swear that wasn't like to identify you so we can chase you down after service and get you signed up. So, not at all. But what that is all about is that I want you to understand that I want those of you that are serving to be able to see everyone that's serving. And for those of you that maybe you haven't connected yet, somebody near you stood. And I'd encourage you to just talk to them and ask them about serving. And so now you've been able to identify. So serving is a great way to celebrate. It's a great way to celebrate your love and your gratitude for what God has done and is doing in your life and in this community. And it will help you grow, and it will help us grow by having you be connected to this movement, because by you being connected, it makes us stronger and makes us more diverse. Even if this is only your third or fourth visit, you're invited to play along. And if you've ever been a little freaked out about the idea of serving, you don't have to be freaked out here, because we don't ask you to just commit to anything up front. Basically, here's what we ask you to do, is just test drive. What that would look like potentially today is that you take this orange card, you put your name and your contact information on there, and just check, find a place to serve. And then drop that in the giving box on the way out, or drop it by the welcome table, and somebody will contact you, and we'll just have a conversation and find what area might be the best fit for you. And then we have you test drive it. Just come in one time, serve alongside somebody that's done it for a while, so that way you experience it first time and can make a first-hand informed decision. I promise there's something that's a great fit for you. There's a team that comes in the morning and helps set up Kids Life or helps tear down afterwards. There are people that come in and help set up this room on Sunday mornings or help tear down afterwards, because we're a portable church. All of this, except for the chairs and the tables, we set up, we tear down each week. And so some of you, we have helpers in Kids Life. They're like, no, I don't want to teach a lesson or lead anything, but I can help. I love kids. So we have helpers. We have some that lead and teach. Some of you have great smiles and personalities. Maybe we would have you test drive being somebody that greets people as they're coming in so that they have a great first impression when they enter. Some of you don't have great smiles or personalities. We have you set up flags in the parking lot. No, I'm just totally kidding. So we got some great-looking people setting up flags. But if you're an introvert, that's a great role. And we set up the flags because this is a great big building. We just take up a small part of the footprint here, and we want people to more easily be able to find it. We want to create a good experience. And so these things matter. Maybe during the week you might host a small group, or we have tech roles on Sunday mornings, or you might come and serve with us in Project Laundry in a couple of Thursdays. But one way or another, there is a place for everyone in this community to serve. And you'll make a difference. And you'll make new friends. And you'll be a crucial part of us growing stronger and impacting lives and families in this city. And the third thing that I ultimately want for you in being fully engaged is to group. That if you're not already in a group, for you to test drive a small group. Or maybe you have three or four friends. You don't want to get into an existing group, but the three or four of you, like, we just like to form a group. A lunch group, an evening group, a something. Because my goal for you is to have the best quality of life, and we're not designed to do life alone. About 3 months ago, I initiated a new group with my wife and I and two other couples, because we're just the same. We need an environment and a place where in a space where people can know us and love us for who we are, all of our imperfections, and we do the same with them, where we can be open and honest and real, where it's safe and confidential, where we don't have to try and pretend and be neat and tidy. And so many of us, part of the reason that we're still having some of the same struggles and battles in our life that we were having years back is because we continue with the strategy of trying to do it on our own. And I want you to have an abundant life. Some of you need to be in a group because you're at a place of strength right now, mentally, physically, spiritually. You go like, I'm doing great. Well, here's the thing. If God's given you abundance in those areas, that's not all for you. He's given that so that you can come alongside people, they're not so full, or maybe they're almost empty, and you're the one that can encourage them and lift them up and walk alongside them. So please, if you're not already engaged, at least test drive a small group, or we'll help you start one. And again, this card is your friend. Just fill it out. Connect to the small group. find a new. Okay, the last thing before we wrap up, the fourth element of full engagement. And I want to say this, as most of you know, we serve the under-resourced and the poor in our community through Project Laundry. For those of you who are not familiar with it, we go into the spring clean laundromat on North Woodlawn the second Tuesday of every month, and anyone can come in, no questions asked, and get up to 3 loads of laundry done for free. No questions asked. We also provide a meal. Some of the volunteers have been part of that. They created like a space and a place for kids. In our first 5 months of doing Project Laundry, we've been able to provide 586 loads of laundry for people. We've had moms and individuals come and tell us, if it weren't for you, my kids wouldn't have clean clothes to wear to school. 212 people. We're averaging about 42 people or families a night. Now, Grant, and the cool thing is some of them, they're coming back. We love serving the under-resourced in this way, but it costs. It costs about $500 a month. Because we are sometimes not super smart, we decided to launch this right about the time we took a $2,400 a month drop in our monthly support from the church planning arm of the denomination that we're part of. Like, we just need to do this. We need to do this as a church. In addition, when we launch New Life, we launch with a special affection and a heart for the next generation. Now, at that time when we launched, we said next generation, we were primarily thinking college and career. But now, 2 years in, we realize that we're thinking too late in life. Because statistically, and for those of you, you'd say, I am a Jesus follower, this will matter to you. For those of you just exploring, maybe not so much. But what would you guess the decisions to follow Jesus, the decisions made between birth and 18 versus any point in life, what percentage would you guess is made within that window of birth and 18? 93%. 93%. And all of us that are 18 or older, you know, you make a lot of big decisions during those growing up years, and especially you start getting into high school and early in college. We make a lot of big decisions, some which carry through the rest of our lives. We want to make sure that we are actively engaging and walking alongside children and young men and women as they navigate this crucial time in life. And we want to position ourselves to effectively come alongside and partner with parents. For those of us that have raised kids, we either know how valuable it is to have people partnering with us, or we wish we would have had somebody partnering with us. And we want to be the best we can as we walk alongside parents and serving and shaping and investing in the next generation. Parents need partnership. And we want to provide that. We want to create irresistible environments for our kids. But our ability to do that is limited. I'm limited in my time to connect with young adults because we're growing and we're adding new people. We're adding families. We're adding small humans. One way or the other, they're either coming and adding or we are birthing them like crazy. Our kids' life team is stretched. We're at the point where we need to add at least one, if not more, age divisions to get more age-appropriate categories. We know this. We're at the point we need to continue to grow and expand this. Amber Gonzalez, many of you don't know her. This is Amber and their David and Amber's little guy, Judah. She is a working mom of a 3-year-old, and she is stretched as far as she can go. And she's got an amazing team around here and around her, and she's stretched as far as she can go. As well, we've got middle schoolers and high schoolers. Some of you have them. Some are coming or have been coming. We've had some that have visited because we haven't been in a position to start that and really begin to create community for those age groups. They kind of move on because they want that. So we recognize there's this opportunity. So all this connects to the fourth element of being fully engaged. Because besides providing an excellent weekend experience, and we don't even want to consider letting go of Project Laundry. Next year, we're going to set our sights on hiring a next-gen pastor that can truly focus on the next generation. But all of this to do all of this connects to the fourth element of becoming fully engaged. And that's this. I want to ask you to be generous and to give. Give to New Life. Now, the awesome thing about New Life is that the majority of you give. The reason that we've been able to do all that we've been able to do so far is because you give. And Sean and I, we are priority percentage givers. That means for us, as soon as one of us gets paid, for us, it's the first 10%. We channel right to New Life. And we love doing it because we so believe in what God is doing in and through this community. We may be small for now, but we're growing and we are already impacting individuals and lives in this city. We love giving to God by giving to this community. On top of that, for Sean and I, there are other ways that we direct our God-given resources. But for those of us, I want to say to those of you that maybe you've been afraid to give in the past, I get it. Trust me. In fact, there was a time in my life where I could give you 15 reasons why I didn't give. And I give my wife the most credit in helping me become a more generous person. Early in our marriage, I was stingy and I was not generous. I didn't mind spending money on me. Like, I was all down. In fact, I had no problem whether we had the money or not. Like, I'll spend it on me. And Dave Ramsey changed that. But I was not stingy. I was stingy and I just was not generous. And my wife helped me with that. So I can tell you from personal experience, and you're surrounded by people that they could share their stories, that there's a deep personal sense of joy and purpose and fulfillment that comes in giving and being generous and investing in something bigger than yourself, something that just consuming can never give you. And honestly, there's something really fun about pooling our resources together to do something bigger that on our own we could not accomplish on our own. So I'm not just asking you to give. I'm just asking you individually, because the title this morning is It's Personal, for you to just personally take your next step in giving. And to be clear, we never are asking you to give to a church. When we invite you to give here, we're inviting you to give to the impact that we can have together as a community. This isn't about paying rent. It's about changing lives. It's about not being mastered by our money. And we all know what that feels like. And generosity breaks the grip money has on our hearts. So for those of you that maybe you never give or you rarely give, your first step is simply to begin. To simply pick a percentage. Maybe it's 1%. Maybe it's 2%. Maybe it's 4%. Maybe it's 6%. Maybe you've got great margin today and you just go right to 10. But whatever it is, pick a percentage and then set it up on recurring giving. My wife and I'll be honest, up until just recently, for me, there was like this personal thing. No, I want to, like, when I get paid, get online and go through the process and give. It was kind of a spiritual exercise for me. I wouldn't put that on anybody else. But I finally, my life's gotten so busy, like, you know what? I'm not actually like cheating God by not doing the process, because if I'm putting on recurring, well, then I'm making it priority. So I'm just saying there's great value in doing it. But pick a percentage and then set it up to be automatic. And here's the thing. Again, by doing this, then you play an important part. And it's not just continuing to do weekend service and what we're offering the community here and offering Project Laundry, but you position us. You position us where in 2019 we can be strong in serving our community, and then serving the next generation. For those of you, you sporadically give a check from time to time, maybe online from time to time. I just, kind of very similar, I want to invite you to pick a percentage. Figure out maybe the percentage that you've given over the last year of your God-given resources, and then raise it, and then set it up on recurring giving. Maybe you do the math, and you'll discover with the income God's provided you, you're around 2%. I want to invite you to bump it up and automate it. If you haven't already, maybe you're raising it to 5 or 6%. Maybe for some of you, again, you have plenty of margin. You can do 10% or more, but either way, just make it consistent. Because again, we don't just want to keep Project Laundry going, but we want to be in a position where we can do more to serve in our community when those opportunities arrive. Or because, like, we're in a place we need to find another way to invest in this community and to make a strategic hire for the next generation. Then for those of you, you're like Sean and I, you're a priority percentage giver. You give 10%, you maybe give more. It is a joy for you to fund what God is doing. Combined with that, you find yourself in a season of life where you have good and ample margin in your finances. Some of you, God has afflicted you with wealth. Here's your next step. In addition to automating, if you haven't already, in addition to considering increasing your monthly giving, and that's something that Shauna and I are doing as we go into 2019, we're increasing our monthly giving. And everybody's invited to play in this, but maybe you, from your extra margin or maybe your stored assets, you consider a year-end gift that would give us the seed money to position us for hiring a next-gen pastor. Above and beyond regular giving, Because by the way, robbing Peter to pay Paul, the math does not work. Like if you're regular giving and say, oh, I'm going to just channel that over here. That's not how it works. But my goal would be by the end of the year that we would raise $25,000. And I believe we can do it. Sean and I are already bumping up our monthly giving for 2019. And I'm just asking you to do what we're already doing. And that's beginning to have a conversation. To pray about it. God, what would you have me do above and beyond so that we enter 2019 from a position of strength as a community? And then we'll decide on an amount and we'll give it. But it will be an amount that we feel. And I hope that makes sense. I'm just asking you to do that. We can do that. And we should have some fun with it. I believe that we have what it takes to partner together to come up with the seed money for a next generation leader. And I say seed money because at the moment for us financially, it's not doable. But a seed money up front would position us to move forward. So to be crystal clear, we're setting a financial and year-end giving goal of $25,000 above and beyond our regular giving. And my wife and I are right in this with you. I'm not inviting you to do something that we are also not being a part of. So what I'm asking requires sacrifice, and we're all in. We're overjoyed with what Jesus has done for us. And the gratitude and the anticipation that we have for what the future holds, it's a pleasure to be generous towards what God is doing, to give towards what we create here on the weekend, through the week, and loving and serving the under-resourced and impacting the next generation. So I just want to ask you to start praying and talking about it. Figure out a number that's in your comfort zone, and then I want you to pray about it some more. Move that number up until you come up with a number that you feel it. So, if you're a first-time giver, that's your next step. Just begin to give. If wherever you fall in that, that you would be a part of this. So we share this each week, the ways to give. You can give in person. We have a giving box in the back. You can go to newlifewichita.com. You can give online or set up recurring giving. Or you can text them out, 84321. We try to make it as simple as we can. As someone who cares deeply for you and wants you to thrive in your relationship with God, your relationship with Jesus, your relationship with one another, and those he's put in your life, I want you to live each day knowing that you are fully invested in something bigger than yourself. And so, fully engaged, to invest and invite, to serve, to give, group, and to give. That's our goal for you, is that by doing this together, we would serve others, we would reach into this community and impact, reach people that no one else is reaching. So I'm going to pray and then I'm going to dismiss you. God, all of us walked into this building today with stuff. We've got things going on in our life, people that are close to us, that they're struggling with something. And I just pray for each one of us as we leave today. God, that if for those of us that follow you, if any way we lost some of that passion or that edge, that God, we would just have that reignited, remembering the magnitude of what you've done for us. And that, Father, that we would not be afraid to step out in ways that you may be challenging us to step out of our comfort zone to make an impact in the lives of other people. I pray, God, that you leave here today with each of us in a tangibly felt way. And that, God, that you would do dramatic things in our life to help us see you above the chaos and the busyness and the craziness of everything else. That you not get lost in all of that. So I pray all of this in the name of Jesus. Amen. All right, you guys have a great week. Invite some of my Christmas series next week. See ya.